Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
It's Thursday, the 4th of May. Welcome to Africa Link with me, Jane Ayeko Kumet in Bonn, Germany.
And me, Wanjiko Mwaura from the social media desk with your comments and what else you're talking about.
Coming up, a South African court throws out application by the embattled Nigerian pastor. But how have his countrymen been reacting?
Disappointment of highest order for a religion leader to involve in such atrocities.
And we asked the question, should governments introduce regulations to monitor religious groups? What are you saying about it? Tell us.
And former Tanzanian President Jakaya Kikwete blames Africa's problems on colonialism, but remains optimistic the continent is on the right track.
In some of these countries, the colonial powers never bothered to educate the people. African countries have invested so much in the education of their people.
Stay tuned for those stories and a lot more.
I'm Mark Caldwell with the DW News. Two senior members of German Chancellor Angela Merkel's cabinet, Finance Minister Wolfgang Schäuble and Economics Minister Brigitte Tsipras, are attending the World Economic Forum on Africa in Durban to promote German government-sponsored initiatives on assisting the continent. Schäuble intimated that attitudes to Africa in Europe had undergone a radical change.
We all in Europe, by the way, not only German government, we have understood that Africa is one of the most important issues for stability and growth in this globalized world of this century.
Separately, at the World Economic Forum, Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe has denied that his country was a fragile state. Mugabe's government is struggling with a debt crisis and acute shortages of cash, but the 93-year-old leader told a panel discussion that it was wrong to refer to Zimbabwe as a fragile state, even from an economic point of view. Mozambican opposition leader Afonso Lahoma said on Thursday he had extended indefinitely a truce he first announced unilaterally in December between his rebel Renamo group and the Frelimo government. "This is great news for the people of Mozambique," he said, speaking from his hideout in central Mozambique. South Africa's High Court has ordered President Jacob Zuma to provide reasons for his decision last month to fire Finance Minister Pravin Gordhan in a cabinet reshuffle that led to sovereign debt downgrades. The court was ruling after an application filed by the opposition Democratic Alliance. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. And DW has learnt from the German Africa Foundation that the winner of the German Africa Award for 2017 is the Ugandan human rights lawyer Nicholas Opio. He told DW what the award meant to him.
This award is very prestigious, and I follow after extremely eminent and preeminent Africans, including the former public protector in South Africa, a Ugandan diplomat who was the UN Undersecretary for Children's Affairs. So it's really, really humbling for me that this award was bestowed upon me.
Germany's Social Democrats and Greens are calling for a special meeting of Parliament's Defence Committee, at which they can question Defence Minister Ursula von der Leyen about the latest scandal enveloping the armed forces. Von der Leyen has been under pressure since revelations last week that a 28-year-old lieutenant had posed as a Syrian refugee in Germany with the intention of carrying out attacks on migrants. For more news and information, please visit our website dw.com. I'm Mark Caldwell.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link, broadcasting from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Jane Ayeko Kumet.
With me, Wanjiko Mwaura.
Court in South Africa has turned down an appeal application of a Nigerian pastor accused of human trafficking and sexual exploitation. Back home, our correspondent Uwesu Abubakar Idris has been finding out what Nigerians make of the case.
In a country where majority are religious, the allegation has sparked a lot of interest and reactions. Many people say people hiding in the religious guise are taking advantage of their followers. The Nigerian pastor was back in court. Yesterday, dozens of his supporters, mostly women, staged a protest outside the court demanding his release.
Disappointment of highest order for a religion leader to involve in such atrocities. The religious leaders are supposed to be the guardians of people to morality, to be a conformist and not a deviant. We condemn it with all sense of morality. And we pray that others should not toe that line.
I'm not happy because this God that people are serving, people always using this God to molest others.
The televangelist is accused of sexually abusing girls as young as 14 years, which has raised angry reactions from women rights organizations fighting for the protection of women. Haji Arabi Abdullahi is a senior official at the Women Rights Advocacy Center based in Abuja.
Whatever way you look at it, people should not use religion or any other thing to abuse children. Children are a blessing from God. They are a blessing that God has given to us. I know there are a lot of people that traffic children now in the name of religion or other things, but there is no way anybody can take a child in the name of religion in order to go and abuse him. It's I can call it double criminality. When we talk about human rights, it's really, really very wrong to abuse the right of a child who doesn't even know what is happening. From what we are hearing from news, from the radio, television, you will see that as if this thing is on the increase, because every day you hear it on the television.
Efforts to get a reaction from the Nigeria's Foreign Affairs Ministry failed. It remains unclear if South Africa will repatriate the accused pastor.
Uwesu Abubakari Idris with that report.
Now, on social media, we asked, should African governments introduce regulations to monitor religious groups? And your response is, Franklin Bernard from Nigeria says, if the Nigerian pastor is found guilty of the charges, he should be jailed to serve as a warning for others. And Peter Agugu from Nigeria says the Nigerian pastor should be legally prosecuted so as to serve as a lesson to those who wish to embark on such inhuman activities.
Actually, Peter goes on to say, introduction of regulations aimed at monitoring religious groups in the African government is necessary to curb illicit activities perpetrated by such a people. And we go on to some news from here in Europe. French centrist Emmanuel Macron is poised to win presidential elections. In last night's television debate, Macron and his far-right rival Marine Le Pen clashed over terrorism, the economy and Europe. Macron accused Le Pen of being a liar while she called him a candidate for the elite class. But as the French gear up for Sunday's election, where does each of them stand in terms of French-Africa relations? Zipra Nyambura with the details.
The hot-tempered debate was the last attempt by the two candidates to convince a number of undecided voters. Both have different ideologies on issues like migration and foreign policy. Deutsche Welle's correspondent Barbara Wessel, who has been following the campaign trail, says Le Pen's National Front Party has an anti-migration policy, which means refugees and migrants from Africa have to brace up for tougher measures.
The way she talks about migrants, particularly from Africa, I cannot really imagine, and the insulting way that she talks about people, I cannot really imagine how she could then later on mend political ties with these countries, or whether even she wanted to do it. It is totally unclear, as she hasn't really spoken about this. There are no details available. We don't know. Macron, on the other hand, would continue French policy the way it was. He would, of course, honor the commitments that have been made, and he might bring something like a more critical spirit to the whole affair.
France's influence in Africa, mainly in Francophone countries, cannot be underestimated. In March, Marine Le Pen visited the West African state of Chad, while Emmanuel Macron went to Algeria. Stefan Brunet, an expert on French-African relations at the German Council on Foreign Relations, explains the basis of France's relations with Africa.
There are still distinctive connections between parties in France and in the former colonies, although that is getting reduced.
France's influence in Africa, mainly in Francophone countries, cannot be underestimated. The corporations have massive presence in former colonies. French companies still import raw materials from its former colonies, and about 9,000 soldiers are stationed in these countries with an official mandate to fight terrorists and train African troops. As the French go to the polls, it's clear that no French political elite would want to lose influence in Africa or risk losing a claim to the Grandee.
Zipporah Nyambura reporting.
A comment from Katniss. She says the French election won't change anything because we have worse enemies inside.
And now to South Africa, where World Economic Forum, which is taking place in Durban, has brought together several dignitaries, including current and former heads of state. They are all deliberating on different approaches to Africa's many problems. Africa needs to invest more in its education system. But what's the problem with it? Where did things go wrong and what can be done? In an exclusive interview with DW, former Tanzanian President Jakaya Kikwete responded to these questions.
It is problematic in the sense that we started at very low levels. And I'll give an example. Tanzania has been a German colony, also a British colony. By the time we got independence in 1961, there were only two engineers. We now have 18,000. It's an investment that we made. In some of these countries, the colonial powers never bothered to educate the people. So a lot of this investment that you are seeing in Africa is actually has been undertaken after independence. First, you have got to acknowledge that we inherited a very poor education system. African countries have invested so much in the education of their people, but it's not enough. At independence, we were only 9 million. Now we are 50 million. So, you know, the obligation becomes even bigger. So there are instances of governance as a problem, but we should not think that everything is a problem of governance. We should appreciate the size of the challenge. One, strengthen performance of the education system. Two, leverage innovation. Three, inclusiveness in the education system. And four, increase investments in education. And the new innovative ways of raising resources, we should be able to overcome the education challenge. And we think by 2040, most of these countries will be at the same levels as every other country. There are countries that are doing well in various aspects, even within the low and middle-income countries. So we are saying the examples of those countries should be emulated. For example, take Ghana. They've done so well in terms of access to education. Of course, their challenge now is learning outcome. Go to a country like Tunisia. They have done so well in some other aspects, but challenges on learning outcomes.
Former Tanzanian President Jakaya Kikwete speaking to DW in Durban. Now, Wanjiku, talking about education, there's something that I've been looking up on social media that's been trending to do with appointments within the Kenya Airways. Have you come across something like that?
Absolutely. People have been talking about it as Kenya Airways have appointed a new CEO and managing director. Now, why this is making news on social media is because the person who is Sebastian Mikoz was the president of Polish Airlines, which means he is a foreigner. And so people have been asking questions like, why do we need a foreigner to run a national body like Kenya Airways is?
So they want to know whether or not Kenya has competent people to manage the airline.
Yes, indeed. But this news has been received with a little bit of skepticism. Washira says, I'm not convinced that Sebastian will make a difference in Kenya Airways. It's just a game of musical chairs. They should just sell the loss-making company. A comment from Naima Grace asks, does a foreigner have to run Kenya Airways for it to be successful? When will Kenya ever trust its own sons and daughters?
A question that relates to what the Tanzanian former president has just been talking on about colonialism, because I see a Sebastian here also commenting, saying a Polish appointed by Kenyans to manage Kenya Airways. That's an interesting. I mean, there was no Kenyan qualified to take over. He's asking the same question that we've been discussing about.
Yes, indeed. And just a response to this question that is being repeated over and over again. Bundy Vincent says, Kenya Airways is a global company, so it shouldn't matter if Sebastian, a foreigner, runs it or not.
A good comment to end this session now. I know that there are so many of them, but we wouldn't be able to read all of them.
Yes,
but you
indeed.
Can keep your comments coming in, and we'll be back with more stories. Stay tuned. You're still listening to DW's Africa Link, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
With me, Wanjiko Mwaura.
Still to come, participants at the World Economic Forum in Durban bash African leaders for overstaying in power. But first, we have learned that the Ugandan human rights lawyer Nicholas Opiyo is the recipient of this year's prestigious German Africa Prize. He has been honored for his role in promoting peace, democracy and human rights. I asked him what this means for him.
This award will give us more impetus to carry on the work that we are doing. But in spite of the challenges that we might have on the continent, if we work hard at it, with the support of our friends and partners, everything is possible and there can be a brighter tomorrow for our continent.
What has your journey been like working in such conditions, but nevertheless not giving up trying to fight for human rights in a country like Uganda?
Well, it's been a very difficult journey with a country in which you've had a leader in power for the last 30 years and who shows no intent of leaving. And their means of retaining power is through coercion, through bribery and other abuses of human rights. And every turn, you're having to face the state actors and state agents, you know, and every time it's a hard bargain, it's a fight.
Ugandan human rights lawyer Nicholas Opiyo.
And just to remind you from wherever you're listening, if you'd like to contribute to the show, go over to our Facebook page, DW Africa, and leave us your comment for a chance to be read on air.
And we continue with some African news again. The World Economic Forum for Africa conference that is taking place in Durban has put spotlight on the poor and deteriorating socio-economic and political conditions in several parts of Africa at the doorsteps of leaders who overstay in power. They said if this is not resolved, the continent is bound to see more violence and more unrest. From Durban, Subri Govender sent us this report and is now presented by Susan Holden.
Speaker after speaker condemned African leaders who overstay in power, saying their actions resulted in fragile statehood. Winnie Byanyima, the executive director of Oxfam International, pulled no punches when she said the autocratic attitude of some leaders contributed to the promotion of fragility in many African states. She said leaders in several instances fail to respond to the concerns of the people and do not create conditions for people to improve their social and economic well-being.
You can have democracy or you can have inequality, but you can't have both. So because our leaders choose inequality, they sacrifice democracy. They close down. They silence people. And that's a problem on our continent. And we are going to see more unrest. We're going to see more violence.
Cameroonian entrepreneur Gisèle Yitambin used the example of her country to highlight the danger of concentrating power in just a few hands.
We are seeing that large and growing economic inequality because economy resources are captured by a small group of people. We are seeing inability of the society to provide jobs to young people mainly, and this usually involves exclusion and inequality.
Yitambin further emphasized the need for more women in leadership positions to foster development and prevent countries from slipping into fragile states.
Women have to really be at the mainstream. They have to be part of the system. There have been solid evidence that when women participate in the financial sector, in the governance, and all those kind of activities, the country, the society really benefit.
As for Uganda's Victor Ochen, the executive director of the African Youth Initiative Network, the biggest problem lies in the fragile relationship between young and old, rich and poor, and the urban and rural populations.
When we see the generation that feels neglected, that feels abandoned, they're not listened to, they're targeted, that generation will rise.
Zimbabwean President 93-year-old Robert Mugabe, who's been in power for more than 30 years, was a surprise participant at the seminar that discussed fragile states in Africa. He rejected claims that his country was a failed state, saying that Zimbabwe was the most highly developed country in Africa after South Africa, and that it has the best educational system and the highest number of highly skilled people.
A report by Subri Govender.
Well, looking over at the social radio comments coming in, there are varied sentiments on this topic with people using sarcasm to express themselves. One user going by the name Norbert says, fragile state sessions was created by the West so as to undermine the development and prosperity of Zimbabwe. And others posed questions to the organizers of the event, such as Tabi Leng, who asks, World Economic Forum, whoever thought it was a good idea to have President Mugabe on that panel is anti-progress.
There are interesting comments here. And Wanjiku, I see that some people are listening to our show and they are responding right away, like this one. Mulesu Kanyali says, it's not his style, I think she's referring to Mugabe, to admit weakness of his country, because by doing so, he will be crucifying himself. I like it that people are listening to the show and commenting right
away.
Yes,
indeed.
So, Wanjiku, some more comments coming in from there. I see Akim Anosela saying, that's a big lie. Zimbabwe is not a developed country a little bit. These are all live comments that are coming on right away.
Keep commenting, but we go on.
And we shall come back there a little later.
Youzone.
For Youzone, we go to Cameroon and meet Jean Pascal Somb Lingom. 29 years ago, measles robbed him of his sight. Other than pitting himself, Lingom focused on academics. Today he works with Cameroon's national broadcaster and is an inspiration to many. Ngala Kilian Chimtom tells us his story.
In the hustle and bustle of Cameroon's capital Yaoundé, a 30-year-old blind man sings and plays a drum. A plate is placed in front of him, and passers-by drop coins into it as reward for that public entertainment. Elsewhere in the remote Ekondo Titi in Cameroon's southwest region, blind people take to the streets in protest over what they call complete neglect by the local council.
We are hungry. Ekondo Titi Council, we are hungry.
Feelings of helplessness and hopelessness are common amongst Africa's blind people, but one blind man is breaking barriers and bringing hope to those like him in Cameroon.
The Ebola outbreak in West Africa in 2014, recurrent earthquakes, and recently the Zika train accident are natural, human, and technological catastrophes plaguing the continent with huge economic, social, and humanitarian damages.
That is the voice of Jean Pascal Somb Lingom. He is the only visually impaired journalist in Cameroon working for the state broadcaster, the CRTV. A measles attack 29 years ago led to his blindness, but that did not deter him from the higher ideals of scholarship. Through sheer perseverance, he rose through the academic ladder, obtaining a master's degree in bilingual studies from the University of Yaoundé. But he didn't stop there.
I sat down one day like that in my room. I was alone. My father was no more. My mother was no more. And I was like, but what am I going to do now that I'm left alone? PhD studies are very expensive. I don't have money for that. So that's how an idea came to my mind. And I went to ASMAC. And after my studies in journalism, I was finally recruited by CRTV, where I'm working today.
ASMAC is a government institution that trains journalists in Cameroon. Somb Lingom faces significant challenges at the job site, with a working environment that is ill-adapted to visually challenged people. His condition has helped him to become a better reporter. Nevertheless, he says,
the challenges, there are so many. You don't have the necessary equipment for editing. You have to look for someone who can help you edit.
Somb Lingom considers himself an ambassador to not only other blind people, but people with disabilities in general. He is the president of Stichting Fakkel 2000 Cameroon, a Holland-based organization which assists people living with disabilities. The impact of Somb's activities has been significant. Evelyn Angong, who lost her sight in 2009 due to diabetes, is one of those who have been inspired.
Som Lingom is the very first blind person I ever met.
Som Lingom and Evelyn Angong are both working hard to change the public perception of those struggling with visual challenges.
Ngala Kilian Kimpton in Yaounde, Cameroon.
Yeah, I echo a quick comment on that one. Tahiru Zakaria from Ghana says, as the saying goes, disability is not inability. The Cameroonian journalist is not just an inspiration to his community, but the world at large. His ability to overcome his predicament is a wake-up call to persons with disability everywhere. All I can say is bravo to that journalist.
Good encouragement over there.
Speaking out.
As Zimbabwe cracks down on anti-government protests, female activists continue to bear the brunt. They are not only caught up in the violence, but have to ward off criticism and harassment in a mainly patriarchal system. Zimbabwean Linda Masarira is among the founders of the Tajamuka movement that led to last year's protests against 93-year-old President Robert Mugabe. She has been arrested many times, detained for months, and became the first person to be convicted over mass anti-government protests last year. She told DW's Amin Esif that women activists in Africa need their own space. Take a listen.
There are a lot of challenges that we go through as women, and most of these challenges are perpetrated by men. You will also find that within our activism circles, in our different locations, women are always abused verbally, emotionally, by their male counterparts who are activists. And we have to get to that stage where we can offer support to each other. Because since time immemorial, in especially African politics, I can't talk about other continents' politics. I'll talk about what I know in my continent. Women have been used as pawns for political decisions, political ideology, and all that. Most of the time, you'll find that the men are the barrier for activism in women. The husband can say, I don't want you to do this. A married woman cannot do this. But that person will be having her own rights violated, and they're supposed to speak out and correct the things that are affecting their livelihoods. You also realize as well that religion has also played a major role in shaping up activism in females. You find that a lot of women will not participate in activism or politics because the patriarchal society in Africa, culturally, religiously, says that a woman's place is in the home.
What has been the response from your male colleagues, the men that you trust that you work with in activist groups? Do they support you in this to try to make spaces for just women activists?
It has been difficult, and it is still difficult. Men just won't accept a woman who's powerful. But at the end of the day, it's not about a powerful woman. I don't believe in being powerful without transforming lives, without transforming livelihoods, without changing the current economic situation in Zimbabwe. I believe in change. I believe in working together in unity of purpose, diversity. You know what I mean? I believe in a tolerant society where we can tolerate each other from different angles so that we can rebuild our Zimbabwe together. So at the end of the day, these are some of the barriers that women face. And the other challenge in Zimbabwe is political violence. There's a lot of political violence. The playing ground is not even, and most women are naturally of the weaker sex, and they wouldn't be resilient to contain the violence that goes with activism and political participation.
You've said you've lost friends and family because of activism. Do you think this would have happened to you if you were a man?
I don't think so, because men who do what I do, they're usually labeled as heroes. They're the man, you know, the masculine thing. And for me, I've had a lot of women actually downplaying me. A lot of women will say, I'm abusing my children. I don't have time for my children. I'm trying to be a man. You know, it's very rare to get those positive comments or those uplifting comments, words of encouragement from women. It's just recently when women are now typing on my Facebook, encouraging me. But this I expected when I started doing this thing, because I've been a trade union leader. I used to face the very same resistance at work. But gradually, people will see, no, this is a worthy cause. And naturally, people will follow.
Amian Isif was speaking to Zimbabwean activist Linda Masarira. I know that there are so many comments coming, Wanjiku, but we don't have so much time for that.
But you can go over to our Facebook page, DW Africa, and there you can get in touch and leave us your comments.
And you can also leave more comments on our WhatsApp page. If you go there, you get indications and you'll certainly follow that. From me, Jen Ayeko Kumet.
And me, Wanjiku Mwaura.
Thank you for listening to Africa Link. Have a nice day.